This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at LinkedIn.com/decide. That's LinkedIn.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Monday to all of you. Nice to be with you. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope you were able to kind of unwind a little bit. I know Thursday had everybody a little bit, you know, a little bit stressed out on Friday, you know, and I don't know that a whole lot happened over the weekend in the NFL to de-stress. There's a lot of good football teams on the Texans schedule. It's one of my biggest takeaways. Seth Payne, Sean Pendergast with you as we welcome you in on a Monday, what would normally be a reaction Monday, but we've spent the better part of the last couple days reacting both on and off the air to last Thursday night's debacle in Kansas City. But fortunately now, the Texans turn their attention to this coming Sunday, their first home game, and they'll get a nice reprieve against the Baltimore Ravens. I'm sure that'll be just the tonic they need to wash the taste of the Kansas
Sean,
City Chiefs.
It could be. It could be, right? If it ends up,
you know what it is,
if they end up being triumphant, then yeah.
It's opportunity is what it is. That's right. How you got to look at it. It's opportunity. As we welcome you in, Seth, did you have a nice weekend? You doing good?
I had an incredible weekend. I got to watch football. I got to come to terms with the departure of Mike D'Antoni that I think we felt was am I crazy? Am I naive? Or did I feel like 2 weeks ago I thought that they might actually work this thing out between D'Antoni and the Rockets?
I never thought they would work it out.
You never once thought? Okay.
No.
Was it as soon as other teams like Indiana started basically saying that, hey, there's a job for you afterwards? Mike D'Antoni was a man with options.
Yeah, for me, it was honestly, for me, it goes all the way back to when they couldn't come to an agreement before the season started. You know, to me, it was going to take a trip to the NBA Finals for it to even be entertained by either side. To your point, Mike D'Antoni is a guy who's done enough in his career and done enough with the Rockets in the 4 years that he was here to be the hottest free agent on the coaching market this offseason. I think he's going to make a lot of money next year, probably coaching a pretty good basketball team somewhere.
But I guess that's where 2 weeks ago I had high hopes for the Rockets.
Then that's a fair point. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, I wonder if the
that
Rockets
escalated
actually,
quickly.
I know. I mean, I guess because either we had deluded ourselves or that we felt that there was an actual promise of beating the Lakers, that there was a chance this might all work out.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, I think that D'Antoni is one of those guys who, for one, without Bizdelic, I kind of wish we could have seen what this all looked like if they'd been able to retain Jeff Bizdelic, the defensive coordinator that went off to New Orleans.
Yeah.
Because he seemed to be the taskmaster that they really needed to get a genuine focus on defense. And the Rockets played good enough defense, don't get me wrong. They played great defense when they had small ball. But there's just that certain undefinable something with the Rockets that's been missing the last couple seasons. And every damn year at the end of the season, James Harden says something cryptic about how, like, well, hey, there's just one thing we need to do, and then that'll be it. And I don't know what it is this year.
Yeah, I don't know what it is either. We'll get into the Rockets. We do need to talk about the Mike D'Antoni era is over. If you're just waking up and you hadn't been following that news cycle this weekend, or you were fully immersed in NFL football, which I can't blame you for, Seth. My biggest takeaway of the weekend. Look, I don't get many weekends, nor do you, just to be able to wake up and go through the whole normal process of a football fan of turning on one of the countdown shows, you know, one of the studio shows, and then just sitting there and immersing yourself in fantasy football, gambling, and alcohol for 6 or 7 hours. I only get like 3 of those a year because of you and I are working on the Texans every day, which I love. I'm not complaining one bit. But when we do get these opportunities to just sit and immerse ourselves in football all day, it's kind of fun. And my biggest takeaway yesterday, non-Texans related, was holy crap. If they hadn't been able to pull off an NFL season this year, I think I would have legit, I'm not even joking, I think I would have legit gone into some kind of depression. If I were waking up on Sundays in September and October and November and there was no NFL football, there's just,
it would have felt.
There's such a, it's so interwoven into our lives in the fall that it's, I mean, honestly, the NFL as a collective entity is like a family member almost. You know what I mean?
You know why that is, Sean? Aside from it being the most popular sport and all of that, right. It's the school year. It's the start of the school year.
Yeah.
So from the time you're a kid, from whenever you start playing football, those two coincide. Football practice means that summer's almost over and that soon you'll be back in school and then you start playing games and watching games. Even if you didn't watch the NFL as a kid, but you were playing football, it's just that's the closest we get to still being an agrarian society where we like have to worry about when the crops are coming in and everything.
Yes.
That's the start of the school year. Instead of after we harvest the wheat, now it's okay, football's beginning. That's when this whole new process begins anew.
It's the autumn solstice is what it is.
Baseball, the problem at the beginning of baseball is that depending on where you are in the country, sometimes it feels like spring, sometimes it already feels like summer. Like, there's no rhyme or reason to baseball season and it's in the middle of the school year. It's not right quite at the end of the school, or it's, I guess it's towards the end, but there's no, it doesn't mark anything.
Yeah.
It's just you're right. Honestly, Sean, I'll make you this promise. Without football this season, there would have been turmoil in the U.S. right now. Not this nice, placid, calm landscape that we have now where pretty much everybody's locking arms one another.
Everybody's
nobody's
getting along
booing
with
any
one
unity
another.
Demonstrations or
right,
anything.
Right,
yeah.
Everybody's just kumbaya everywhere. So that's my takeaway just overall this weekend was great to have NFL back. My takeaway, getting more specific with the Texans, is that this first week of the NFL season, Seth, went about as poorly for the grand O'Brien Easterby experiment as it could have possibly gone. And I'm not just talking about the game on Thursday. DeAndre Hopkins had 14 catches yesterday for the Cardinals in a victorious effort against the defending NFC champions.
Well, and this is important because, look, I know it's 1 week, but just for symbolic sake, remember the theory was that without DeAndre Hopkins, sure, you won't have a receiver who's as good as him, but you'll have more wide receivers. Yeah. The problem is that DeAndre Hopkins outperformed all of the new additions to the Texans offense single-handedly. Yeah. Kurt Warner, somebody relayed this to me because they were listening to the national radio broadcast, and Kurt Warner was doing the Texans national radio broadcast. And he made a really good point, which is that you can say all you want about having a whole bunch of speed or having multitudes instead of one stud. There's nothing that quite replaces having a genuine number one wide receiver. And it's because of the gravity of that number one wide receiver. You know, like DeAndre Hopkins faced more press man coverage than just about anybody in the NFL because teams would rotate a safety over. They would commit two guys to him, either, you know, not bracketing, but always having a backstop for him. To where that loosens things up for everybody else. And when you don't have it, then all of a sudden, Randall Cobb's not getting any meaningful targets in the game.
Yeah.
So, after week one, the scorecard is Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby got de-pantsed on this.
They
did. So we'll see how it is after week two and three.
Yeah, and it wasn't just the Hopkins trade, Seth. The AFC South all of a sudden, you know, it's 1 week, and I guess in 1 week anybody can rise up. But the Jags don't look like nearly the layup that they were supposed to be. They beat the Colts at home this week. And the Texans' opponent this coming weekend, as we alluded to coming into the show at the top of the hour, the Baltimore Ravens look a lot like they did at the beginning of last season. Last season in week one, they took the Miami Dolphins to the woodshed by hanging 59 points on them. Look, there were a lot of people saying, no, this is the year that the Browns are going to finally live up to the talent level on the roster. They look just as bad as they did with Freddie Kitchens as their head coach. The Ravens, who the Texans play this Sunday, a game you can hear right here on Sports Radio 610. They beat the Browns 38-6 yesterday. So, but a fun week one. Fun week one
in
the NFL.
And I think, I guess if you look at Kansas City and Baltimore, it certainly looks like those teams actually got better. Mm-hmm. I'm watching Lamar Jackson yesterday, and I think he's taken a step forward as a quarterback. He looks even more complete than he did before. He looks like he's fully in command of everything on that offense. And Greg Roman, the offensive coordinator, I can't say this enough. Greg Roman, the offensive coordinator for the Ravens, does more things for running quarterbacks than I think maybe any other coach out there right now. And he's done it. He's the one that first basically started using the pistol offense with Colin Kaepernick back in the day. And they just flat out exploit and use Lamar Jackson's skills in such a better way than the Texans use Deshaun Watson's skills.
All right, we are off and running on a Monday. We had a lot of stuff go on over the weekend. Seth mentioned it in the open. We'll hit it here. What is our grade for the Mike D'Antoni era? That's next.
Coming up a little short. We had a good shot a couple years ago. But what stands out mostly is just a great city to work with, great fans and players. It was fun, and it still is fun. And, you always hate to lose. You're always a little bittersweet, but I couldn't ask for better people to work with and better players to work with. So a lot of things stand out, a lot of little things, but had great, great 4 years for sure.
It's Mike D'Antoni. We will circle back to the NFL at the bottom of the hour. We will take a spin around the league at the bottom of the hour as we are as we're here on a Monday during the week leading up to the Baltimore Ravens here in Houston. First home game, no fans in the stadium for the game on Sunday, but we will be in the stadium doing the pregame and the postgame. So very excited. We'll share more about that with you as we roll on with the show today. But big news Rockets-wise is season is over. They pretty much didn't show up on Saturday night. I don't know that I felt like I've wasted 2 hours more watching a sporting event recently, Seth. As much as we love having sports back, I've tried not to, when any of our teams put an effort on the floor like the Rockets did on Saturday night, I've tried not to get too like, well, that was a big waste of time, because we went through 4 months where pretty much anything I was watching on a Saturday night wasn't as good as any sporting event. But that was about as big an empty Saturday night. That felt, honestly, from about 3 or 4 minutes in, it just felt like walking the mile, getting ready to go sit in the chair and have somebody turn on the switch and kill the season. It was.
Yeah, it never feels good, obviously, if you lose a series. But to lose it in that fashion, where it was just almost a foregone conclusion, that puts a real, real bad taste in your mouth moving forward. And like everything you and everybody else had said beforehand, that, hey, this is going to enter a weird offseason for the Rockets where you don't know where to go from here.
Yeah.
They're spending to the gills with Harden and Westbrook. You've got an owner that's never spent into the luxury tax in the last three seasons. Like, where do you go from here? Maybe Morey can pull another rabbit out of his hat, but I think the other side of it is, okay, they've tried Kevin McHale, they've tried Mike D'Antoni. Who's the next coach who's got something extra over those guys? And I think, Sean, if I think about just those two guys, and I haven't actually said out loud Kevin McHale and Mike D'Antoni, I think the one thing that I maybe would be missing in both those guys compared to other championship, like multiple championship coaches, perhaps, is like the ability to tweak your star players. If you think about Pat Riley, Phil Jackson, Steve Kerr, Greg Popovich, all those guys know how to get that extra 2% out of their very best players. And sometimes it's by pissing them the hell off.
Yeah.
I don't know if D'Antoni ever pissed Harden off in a meaningful way. I know McHale pissed Harden off, but it was more just by Harden not liking Kevin McHale. McHale benching Harden was a notable instance of pissing Harden off, but that wasn't really getting the best out of Harden now, was it?
No. I think if you look at I think you hit the nail on the head, Seth. If we're looking to grade the Mike D'Antoni era, I think the positives are pretty easy, because they're the quantifiable things that you can see in the standings. Look, they won a bleep ton of basketball games with Mike D'Antoni as the head coach. They had the second highest winning percentage the last four seasons of any team in the league, behind only Toronto of all teams, a .682 winning percentage. And I think the most admirable thing about that when it comes to D'Antoni is within that four-year window, he did it with three different mixes of players. Obviously, Harden was the straw that stirs the drink for any of them, But his first year here was the year where they decided to go with Harden at point guard, and they signed Gordon and Ryan Anderson, and they tried to make Harden the complete focal point and then just have all complementary players around him. That was not good enough. So the next year, Daryl Morey, to use your phrase, pulls a rabbit out of his hat, trades for Chris Paul. They damn near won an NBA title with Chris Paul, and then the next year they made the second round of the playoffs. They pivot off of that. They trade for Russell Westbrook, and then they go with the small ball this year. So never successful enough to win a title, although I would argue that if Chris Paul doesn't pull a hamstring, it certainly gets really, really interesting, and maybe Mike D'Antoni does win a title as the head coach of the Rockets. But I think that's what I'll remember, is this guy was able to win a lot of games and do it with three very different mixes of players around James Harden. But yes, the big negative to me is that maybe just from a personality standpoint, he was just a little bit too nice for a team that needed somebody a little bit meaner.
Right, exactly. That's it, isn't it? Somebody that needs a little bit meaner. Because it's not like there's one type of coach and that's the only way it works. Right. You know, Steve Kerr is a much different type of coach than, well, let's say Greg Popovich. Those two, very different types of guys, but they both get the absolute max out of not just their star players, but like of all their players. And I think there's two things. There's two things that great NBA coaches do. They're able to, at times, subjugate the egos of their best players, you know, and make the best players understand and realize that, okay, sometimes I've got to defer. But then they also are able to anger them and piss them off. I'll say Pat Riley in Miami, even though he was the executive, not the player, Pat Riley pissed the hell off at LeBron James at times. You know, one of the reasons LeBron left was he felt that Pat Riley's rules were too restrictive. And yet, that's that discomfort that it takes sometimes to really reach on into those unknown territories. And I never get the sense that Harden has been pushed into those territories by his coach. And that's not a knock on James Harden. Every great athlete needs somebody that's going to tweak him and make him that much better if you want to genuinely achieve greatness.
Yeah, I wonder what type of coach it's going to need to be to have James allow for that sort of coaching. And I think an interesting name that's come up in the last 24 hours is Sam Cassell, who is a guy who has a championship pedigree in this city and is a guy who's very well thought of around the league as an assistant coach. Doc Rivers, who he works for, Cassell works for right now with the Clippers, says he's shocked Sam Cassell isn't a head coach already. I think that's a guy, Seth, with a good enough pedigree that James should be able to respect. Oh, look, now if you can't respect what Kevin McHale has done, then I don't know what to say. But Cassell is maybe a little bit closer to James's generation. Maybe communicates differently with James. Maybe James is a different player now than he was when McHale was here 4 or 5 years ago, so there's a middle ground to meet with that sort of thing. I do think this. I think Rocket fans, you know, if Tillman Fertitta and Daryl Morey are trying to make a hire that would be popular with Rocket fans, if they feel that some of that is slipping away a little bit right now with the core of this team getting older and with the Astros and the Texans both pretty popular in this town, Cassell would be a very popular hire, I think, among Rocket fans. So,
oh, I think for sure. We're getting the requisite Mark Jackson suggestion. This is my problem with Mark Jackson.
Yeah, I don't know if I can do that.
He annoys me.
Yeah.
Okay? You leave all basketball discussions aside. He annoys the hell out of me.
He's the anti-Cassell.
Now he could come in. This is the other issue I have, too, is if you say, okay, he's going to come in and install a defense, and then they're going to end up being different because that'll be what sets them apart. They've had defense. Like, they played great defense 2 years ago in 2018. They were playing great defense this year until the rigors of small ball just at some point the entire team collapsed. The rigors of small ball and Russell Westbrook's quadriceps. But, yes, yeah. First and foremost, Mark Jackson annoys me. I'll take Sam Cassell 48 times before I take Mark Jackson.
At least 48 times. Absolutely. All right, I watched the Red Zone channel for 7 hours yesterday, and I'm proud of it, quite honestly. One big part of the presentation that I thought would be an issue, no issue at all. And I've got a question for all of you who were able to sit and watch NFL football from beginning to end on a Sunday every weekend. That's next. It is a reaction Monday. Sorry, voice guy. Didn't mean to step on you. Still getting in mid-season.
Voice guy pauses unnecessarily.
He does. I blame that on him. Thank you, Seth. I didn't want to blame that on him, but I'm glad you backed me up on that. Good to be with all of you on a Monday as we put NFL Week 1. We still got two games left tonight. By the way, the Monday night doubleheader, Seth Payne, is something that I think they need to look at implementing that beyond just week one. I don't know why they only do it in week one. I love the Monday night doubleheader. Now, I like I it a little a bit- less now that I've got to get up early in the morning to do a show. But when I was doing afternoons, the Monday night doubleheader was delightful. I loved
it. I think, see, I'm all for not diluting the product, not diluting the power of Sunday. I don't like Thursday night games for that reason. So there's that. Also, I wonder, all the people on the East Coast that would have to be staying up until, what, well past midnight, I'm guessing?
Yeah. Or,
somehow adding and subtracting 1 hour is too hard for me to figure these things out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they don't want to cut off that potential. I don't know. I don't need that, Sean. I don't need more I don't need more reasons to lose sleep on Monday night.
Okay, so we disagree on that. See if you'll agree with me on this. From watching the games this weekend, the empty stadiums affected my enjoyment of the product 0%. I still enjoyed thoroughly all of the games that I was watching. Well, I watched Red Zone Channel the whole time, which goes to, that'll get to my next question. But I watched Red Zone Channel the entire day, and then on the two smaller TVs, I had, you know, I had full games going on there. But the lack of a crowd didn't affect my enjoyment at all of any of the games.
I would compare how the lack of a crowd affects your enjoyment of the game to the same as like how becoming aware of not being able to go to sleep makes it impossible to go to sleep.
Mm.
Does that make sense? Like, you know, you might not have insomnia until you start worrying or thinking about the fact that you might have insomnia. And then all of a sudden that worry creates insomnia. Likewise, I don't notice the lack of fans, but then all of a sudden when one of the announcers idiotically points it out, then I start thinking about it and then I'm fixated on it and it annoys me. So my one recommendation from the announcers, because I heard this happen, on the Bills broadcast and somewhere else. Just shut the hell up about it. We don't need to know. Let us enjoy our little fantasy land. And also, abandon, for the love of God, TV producers, you're so infatuated with this behind the punter view when you use the sky cam to show behind the punter. Nobody likes that even with a full crowd.
Oh, yeah.
It's disorienting. You can't tell. There's no depth perception. You can't tell how far somebody returns the ball. And now you're seeing all those empty stands in front of you. Stop it.
Yeah.
Stop my suspension of disbelief and just give me just the field dimensions and that's it and my fake crowd noise piped in.
Seth, do you like the angle in basketball games where someone's shooting a free throw so they decide to go with the angle that shoots down as if you were a bird hanging from the rafters looking
kind of
down
like
into the hoop? You like that?
I kind of like that, but I'm more like just in basketball when they did a good job creating those video boards so that if they just show from the side, you still get the sense that there's people watching this game. That's all I need.
Yeah.
It's not like this is where, and the other thing too, see, now I feel like I'm really being finicky about this whole thing, but I think a lot of our listeners probably agree with me on this. The digital fans are very disorienting. Those Dodgers digital fans, it freaked me the hell out. I didn't know what was going on. And again, it brought me back to like, wait a second. If the digital fans were there for every shot, then I might get used to it. But when all of a sudden they make it look like three busloads of people came in to watch this foul ball, no, I can't do that.
It's just on the basketball broadcast, it's funny just because some people are disorientingly larger than the people sitting right next to them. You know what I mean? Like some guy, you get this one person that looks like an action figure and the guy next to him looks like a parade float. Like it's just like you are not, that's not the discrepancy in size in real life of you two. Stop reminding me that you are just digital and fake.
But at least those are real people. I'm talking about like the entire sections.
Oh, of cardboard people. Yeah.
No. Not the cardboard people. The actual digital sections of fans that like stand up and during a home run.
Yeah, that's right. Fox is doing that. Yeah.
Fox and the MLB Network.
Yeah.
Well, of course, they're always showing like, so it must be when they show a Fox game.
Yeah. So my other big takeaway before we take a spin around the league is that Seth, do you fixate on Red Zone Channel like I do? If I don't have a game that involves a team that I'm rooting for, I don't know why I would ever change it off the Red Zone Channel. It's commercial free for 7 straight hours where they do all the work for me. They're like, oh, let's flip over to this game. Let's flip. They're doing all the work I would normally do. You don't like the Red Zone Channel?
No. I don't like it. I think you end up, I enjoy it at times, but it gets a little too much for me. It gets a little too overwhelming. It's too much information all the time.
Really?
Like to sit down and actually sit and watch. And you know, like I got to watch, look, Sean, why would I watch the Red Zone when I could watch Sam Darnold for series upon series watching the Jets-Bills game?
Thank you for making
which
my
for
point.
Some God unknown reason, I was watching like the first half of the Bills. It was mostly because Josh Allen, when I first turned the Bills game on, I saw Josh Allen do almost the exact same thing that he did in the Texans game where he got lucky and didn't turn the ball over. He's running downfield and coughed the ball up for no reason at all. He did that, and I was like, I'm transfixed by Josh Allen.
Yeah.
He's got the ability to wow you and annoy you and make you think he's the worst quarterback all within the course of 6 seconds.
That, it's funny you say that. That probably was the moment that I had on the Red Zone channel where I'm like, oh, the season is here. Like, football is back. That was my football is back moment. Josh Allen fumbling in the red zone unnecessarily in what should have been a game where they destroyed the Jets by like 5 touchdowns.
The other game when I caught myself was I went back to the Ravens game. And with the Ravens, I wanted to watch continually because I don't think you get a really good sense of a quarterback until you see how he's operating on an entire drive. Like the 90-yard drive that he had at the end of the second quarter, where I thought, "Oh, he's operating just fine." This Lamar Jackson
sure is.
This feels a whole lot like Kansas City driving 90 yards on the Texans, like it's no big deal. Except I think that Ravens series took like 17 plays. Just astoundingly efficient to Lamar Jackson.
Yep. Let's dive into this here. Let's get into Week One. Ben, give us some mood music here so Seth and I can take a spin around the league and react to some of the things that happened in Week One on Sunday. Of course, the Texans, they took care of their business on Thursday. They lose to the Kansas City Chiefs 34-20. So we had a full day without the Texans. What did we watch? Well, it started with the AFC South. There was one matchup inside the division. This was supposed to be a game where it was a celebration of Phillip Rivers arriving in Indianapolis to be the quarterback for the Indianapolis Colts, take him to another level over Jacoby Brissett. Instead, Phillip Rivers did exactly what he did in San Diego and Los Angeles for all those years, threw for about 300 bajillion yards and threw two backbreaking interceptions, which all led to a series at the end of the game where the Jags needed a stop to keep the Colts out of the end zone. Here's how it went.
They blitz again. Rivers fires right side. That ball is knocked away. How about the rookie? C.J. Henderson knocked it away from T.Y. Hilton, and the Jags take over on downs. Oh, is this rookie playing a ball game?
Seth, my big takeaway from this game is that I actually liked seeing the Jags beat the Colts for two reasons. One is that, the Colts are the team that's going to be in the mix at the end of the year. This is a bad loss for the Colts. You're not going to be competing, we hope, with the Jags this season if you're a Texans fan. You're going to be competing with the Colts for the division. I feel that way even though the Texans got de-pantsed on Thursday. The Colts are the team that you're planning on competing with this year, so that was a bad loss for them. And I think it was a reminder, too, that it's early in the season. It's a long season. Anything can happen, and the Jags beating the Colts is just one of those things that falls into the anything can happen category.
Yeah, I think, honestly, I'm glad you reeled it back in there a little bit because the Jaguars have done this a couple times in the last few years where they have early season upsets of thought to be better teams than they are. If anything, maybe I'm guessing Doug Marone, without knowing at all, like Doug Marone seems like the kind of guy that probably had full tackle practices and everything during training camp because he's Joe Hardo. And it might have worked out, and maybe they came out, you know, just like the Jaguars came out, they had a hard training camp and came out and beat the snot out of the Texans a couple years back. That's one of the games I'm thinking of. Then I don't put too much into this. I would also say, too, that I thought that Rivers looked all right, just for the most part, just an inability to close and get the ball into the end zone. I mean, that 445 yards of offense wasn't completely empty calories or anything, and I think it looked a lot like a team that just needs to tie up some loose ends, and they could go either way at this point. They could be mediocre, or if a few things go right for them, they could be genuine contenders.
Yeah, no, that's Seth. That's what he did for a decade with the Chargers. Threw for 1 million yards, and he'd throw two horrible interceptions every game. That's what he did yesterday.
Yeah, he also had horrible offensive lines that whole time, though, too. So I want to see how he adjusts to all of a sudden realizing, like, oh, wow, I don't have to just maybe force this right here.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe. We'll see. So the Colts are 0-1. The Jags are 1-0. Seth, one week in, you have your division-leading Jacksonville Jaguars. The Titans play tonight in Denver in the late game on Monday Night Football. Meanwhile, this play cost me a lot of money yesterday. And Matt Patricia and the Lions looked like they were going to get off to a nice start to the season. And then it was just proven once again that you can, I don't know what the old saying is, but there needs to be one for Matt Patricia and the Lions just being the Lions. Lion going lion is what they did. They were up 23-6 in the fourth quarter of this game. The Bears take a 27-23 lead late in this game. the Lions, to their credit and Matt Stafford's credit, drive back down the field, and they, with seconds to go in the game, had it all right in front of them.
Stafford's got it. Three-man rush for Chicago. Stafford loads and throws.
Yes!
Caught! No, oh! He dropped it! Oh, you
No!
DeAndre Swift dropped it. It was a touchdown in his hands.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, no!
Okay, the home versions of these calls where they're just these cataclysmic, horrible gaffes in a game. If you didn't see this play, I mean, DeAndre Swift, it's a play that you have in fifth grade in the backyard, a pitch and catch between him and Stafford, and he just dropped it in the end zone. Would have been a game-winning play. There was only one play left after this, and it fell incomplete. But the Lions lose. And, Seth, these are the things that happen when your coach is just, to me, when your coach is a disgusting fat pig like Matt Patricia, these are the things that happen.
We don't have to body shame him.
Yes, we other do. Than, did you see other him in that blue pullover that he wore? He looked like Violet Beauregard and Willy Wonka, like they were ready. The Oompa Loompa was ready to roll him out of the stadium after it was over. He's put on 80 pounds. He looks hideous.
Yeah, it's okay to body shame him because remember he tore into that one beat reporter
yes!
the one time.
About appearance.
About how slovenly he's dressed
posture.
And he doesn't have good posture. I'm like, I'm taking this. Are you what?
From
I'm,
you?
I'm taking personal hygiene cues from Harvey Weinstein here.
Yep.
What the hell's going on? I'll tell you what. I'll give credit to Mitchell Trubisky because when I first tuned into this game, I thought that it was actually in Chicago because it looked like gusts of winds were blowing his passes high and wide of his intended targets. But he goes on three touchdown drives in the fourth quarter? Were they all in the fourth quarter?
Yeah, yeah.
Let me double check that.
I'll look,
they
no,
were.
You keep talking. You keep
– Yeah, no.
21
they, yeah,
in the fourth,
it was,
right?
Yeah. It was they were down 23-6 in the fourth quarter.
Yep.
And credit Mitchell Trubisky. Maybe he just needed to warm up a little bit.
Yeah. So that one cost me. I just idiotically took the Lions -2.5 in that game. Screw the Lions. Meanwhile, Aaron Rodgers, sticking with the NFC North, just and by the way, these are all teams that the Texans play in the NFC North, which is why I'm including them in here. The Lions and the Bears much later in the season, but the Vikings they play in 3 weeks, and the Packers they play 3 weeks after that. So I was watching that one. That was one that they televised locally here in Houston, so I had that one going on one of the screens, and I was watching that one intently because I think the hope is if you're somebody who's playing the Packers this year – is that all the moves they made or maybe didn't make this offseason to help Aaron Rodgers, including drafting his future replacement, that was going to cause some sort of distress for Aaron Rodgers. Not so much yesterday against what's supposed to be one of the better defenses in football.
Slot right, three receivers right, one to the left from the shotgun, 2nd and 10, snap, a route going deep down the right sidelines. MVS has it to the end zone for the touchdown!
Word.
Oh, what a play! He took it away from Cameron Danzler, Marquez Valdez-Scantling, 45-yard touchdown reception.
I guess the good news, Seth, is that you do play the Vikings, who just gave up 43 points to the Packers in a few weeks. I think the Vikings are probably going to be just fine. Aaron Rodgers was feeling it yesterday, and he lit up the Vikings 43-34 in a game that was not as close as the final score would indicate. The Packers looked really, really good yesterday.
You know, I've been wondering, maybe in the back of my mind, if the Packers play all along with drafting Jordan Love was just to give Aaron Rodgers a little kick in the pants. Because Rodgers is a guy that butted heads with Mike McCarthy, wanted to do his own thing, has never been thought of as a guy that's necessarily, I don't want to say he's not coachable. He doesn't have that same inner drive, right, that some of the great quarterbacks of the last couple decades have had. He's been more about natural ability and both I guess, physically and mentally. But maybe that's all he needed was that little bit of a blow to his ego and maybe a sense of having to prove something. Because yesterday, if he put together an entire season like that, it would be by far his best season of the last 4 years. He just hasn't been the same guy in the last few years. So I would, if that's on some level what it was, because they can't trade Aaron Rodgers because of the cap implications, then I would say that the Green Bay Packers should get the organization of the year.
There you go.
Yeah,
all right.
There you go.
Shifting gears, one of the other games I think a lot of folks watching yesterday, the Dolphins taking on the Patriots in the first game post-Brady for the Patriots, the first game without Tom Brady as their starting quarterback in 2 decades. Cam Newton's their starting quarterback now. Was working pretty good yesterday for the Pats.
Newton takes the snap. He's going to run it to the right, cuts it upfield, and he waltzes into the end zone. Touchdown, Patriots!
Too easy.
Oh, Newton fakes to him, rolls to the right. Cam's going to run it to the 10. Outside to the 5. Newton to the pylon.
Got
touchdown.
It.
Yeah. Patriots, his second in his New England debut. So,
that's a man right there, boy.
So, Seth, two touchdowns for Cam Newton on the ground. One a designed run, the other one a scramble. And Cam Newton, I think this is the formula of you're the Patriots. Cam Newton on the ground, using him very efficiently. And he was, I think, 15 of 19. Just for $1.55, but 15 of 19 throwing the football, 75 yards rushing. This is a credit to Josh McDaniels. It's one game, but that was a Dolphin team that I think came in hoping to pull off the upset again like they did in Week 17 last year. And oh, by the way, the Patriots are a team that's on the Texans' schedule later on this year that, you know, if Cam Newton is healthy and looks like this, his Patriot game probably got a notch or two harder than we thought it might be.
I guess my first question and thought would be, okay, Cam Newton's not as young as he once was. Is he going to rush the ball 240 times this season? Because I don't know if that's a recipe for success. If he rushes the ball 15 times every game, then I would imagine we'll see Jarrett Stidham at some point. Because Cam hasn't been healthy, and you know, this will be three seasons if he doesn't make it through this season healthy. So that would be my biggest worry. Now, if you're using it as a way to kind of start progressing towards being completely involved in the passing game and incorporating, you know, a guy that hasn't been there really all that long, then yeah, it makes sense. I just don't, this isn't the recipe for them to actually be contenders this year. At some point, they got to start using his arm more than they did today.
And on the other side of that, Tom Brady got things started in New Orleans. He's of course with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Although an interesting side note that the Saints had thought about pursuing Tom Brady if Drew Brees was going to retire in the offseason. That would have been intriguing, Brady going to New Orleans. Instead, Drew Brees sticks around. It was Brady versus Brees yesterday. This is kind of fun that we get this matchup twice this season. Not much fun for Tom Brady, though. He's finding out that he is not in Foxborough anymore.
Brady takes a gun snap, quick throw near side. It's picked off. Janoris Jenkins, 15, 10, 3, 2, 1, touchdown. Janoris Jenkins, pick six.
That looked easy, Deuce. That looked easy. Yeah, Seth, this is a story that's kind of going to fly under the radar because it's happening over the course of two seasons and a team change for Tom Brady. That's three straight games that Tom Brady's had a pick six. The season ender last year against the Dolphins, pick six, threw a pick six to close out the playoff game to Logan Ryan against Tennessee, and now a pick six yesterday. It really kind of handed momentum over to the New Orleans Saints in that game. The Saints really didn't look back after that in the game. That was a game that was, it was really not close after the second quarter. And Tom Brady, you could see just sitting on the bench, Seth, kind of realizing like, it's a little bit different here. You know, this is a different experience now playing. Now, granted, they're playing maybe the best team in the NFC. And I think the Bucs are probably still a playoff team in the NFC, but that was not a great debut for Tom Brady.
I still go back to 2014, 2015, when everybody thought Tom Brady's career was over because he had a rough first few games. Yeah. We go through this every now and then. That was when he was with the same team that he'd been on. I think that, for one, Tampa's defense might end up being really good this year. They had stretches where, in the third quarter especially, it seemed like it towards the end of the third quarter, the Saints had like 10 total yards of offense. Yeah. They are potentially very squelching at points, so I think that's going to help Tom Brady out. And then he's just got so much weaponry out there. I think once they hit their stride, they're going to be a good football team. And like you said, they're going against one of the best teams in the league. Also, I would like to point out that Jameis Winston, I saw him on the sideline. Didn't look like he was squinting at all. I think his off-season LASIK surgery really did the trick.
LASIK surgery, baby. LASIK surgery. Boy, you're right, Seth. They held the Saints to 271 total yards in that game. The Tampa Bay defense did. Yeah,
and it was like 130 yards passing or so. They got after him pretty well. Sometimes the Saints put in Taysom Hill, and the Bucs defense was so dialed in that I thought Taysom Hill might actually have his heart ripped out of his chest on that play. He had like four different guys hit him in the course of 3.7 seconds.
Text message, did you guys talk about D-Hop yet? Yes, in the open to the show, we mentioned that he had 14 catches, which outdid the entire wide receiving core for the Texans in the opening week.
It's like Kyler Murray. It was cool. It was like to see a young quarterback realize, wow, this guy, just anything I throw at him, he's going to come down with it.
This is
He'll
pretty
pull
neat.
It in.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, you remember when like Will Fuller dropped that ball on the first three and out? And you thought, huh, who would have caught that anyway? Yeah. Oh, DeAndre Hopkins.
It would be nice if the Texans could have a guy who would have caught that.
Well, DeAndre Hopkins outperformed all of the new additions to the Texans offense combined. Yeah. Combined.
Yep.
He did better than all of you. Remember when, like, well, hey, but now you've got layers and layers of players. Well, when one of the Texans' layers is Randall Cobb and he doesn't get targeted until the Texans have already essentially lost the game, I don't know how many layers you actually have. DeAndre Hopkins, this nonsense about not being able to pay DeAndre Hopkins, such bogus garbage. Randall Cobb's taking up $9 million of all that money that you couldn't pay DeAndre Hopkins because and then not being used in the game at all.
Joel Corey.
We got to wait 3 years, remember, Sean. We're supposed to wait 3 years.
No, we got to wait 3 years. No, sure. We got all the time in the world, Seth. No doubt. All right. The former agent Joel Corey, actually, as long as we're talking about Hopkins, he had a piece about Hopkins' new contract. I'm not going to dig into the minutiae of the contract, but there was one interesting factoid that he shared in there, just sort of off the cuff, that I had no idea about DeAndre Hopkins. We will get to that. And the only thing that matters with the Astros right now, we will get to that as well. You're listening to Payne and Pendergast.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.